Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
If you drink decaf coffee, there's a chemical often used in the process that some advocates want to ban. We're talking about methylene chloride. It was once used as a paint stripper. The group Clean Label Project says Starbucks and Dunkin', among others, use it to take out the caffeine, but the cancer risk for decaf drinkers is likely very low. Nick Florco has written about this. He's a reporter with our editorial partners at STAT, the health and medicine publication. Hi, Nick.
Hi there.
So explain this chemical to us. How do you use methylene chloride to take the jolt, the caffeine, out of a coffee bean?
Sure thing. So essentially, I mean, methylene chloride works as a solvent. It binds to the caffeine in coffee so that it can essentially be discarded. The process actually isn't that different from how paint stripper is used to remove paint.
Yeah, as you say, kind of as a solvent. And now, as you report, some advocacy groups are pushing the FDA to ban the chemical. What do we know about its cancer risk?
Sure thing. So the first thing I should say is I know this all probably sounds pretty scary,
yeah,
but the information that we have suggests the risk's actually quite low because decaf coffee is roasted at a high temperature after it's decaffeinated, which really removes a lot of the methylene chloride. And that being said, the research that we have about the actual risks of methylene chloride is pretty old. I mean, the FDA estimated in the 1980s that for people who drink multiple cups of decaf per day, the risk of cancer is about 1 in 1 million. But, you know, that estimate does have some flaws, namely the fact that it assumes a cup of decaf is about 5 ounces, which is pretty small. I mean, that's less than half the size of a tall Starbucks cup.
Yeah. So, I mean, given those statistics, even though, as you say, they're a few decades old, what is the argument from these consumer groups that there is this cancer risk, that it should be taken off the market then?
Well, the biggest argument is just that there's no, even though the risk is small, there's no reason to be using this chemical because there's other methods to decaffeinate coffee, the most popular of which is known as the Swiss water method, which as it sounds, is essentially soaking coffee beans in water and then filtering it to remove the caffeine. The other argument is that legally, the FDA doesn't really have a lot of leeway here to allow this to be on the market. There's a 1950s law, actually, that governs the FDA's oversight of food additives, and it says really clearly the FDA can't approve food additives that are shown to cause cancer in people or in animals. And because there are studies showing that methylene chloride causes cancer in lab animals, they essentially say, hey, FDA, you have to ban this.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, the regulatory agencies, as you write in your article, I mean, they have to balance the benefits of a chemical against this risk. So help us understand, how is this chemical banned by the EPA in what was once a paint stripper and not banned by the FDA in coffee? I mean, what do these regulators do and try to balance here?
Well, I mean, the first obvious answer to just sort of the difference between consumer products like paint strippers and decaffeinated coffee is that these are just two different federal agencies that are charged with making these decisions. So the EPA decides on things like paint stripper and the FDA decides on things like food additives. But I would venture to guess also that there's another reason here for why this different treatment. And that's the fact that the exposure levels are just really different with these two products. So if you think about coffee, again, we're talking about very, very small trace amounts being left in coffee beans. We're talking about parts per billion. Versus methylene chloride in a paint stripper, which people are actually coming into contact with. They're breathing it if they're stripping paint. And that sort of exposure just wouldn't happen with coffee unless you were the folks actually doing the decaffeination. You wouldn't get that level of exposure from an end user, for example.
Oh, yeah. And I've heard regulators often say, right, the dose is what's so important to understand what they do, how they ask these questions. Coming back to decaf coffee, tell us about some other ways to do it, if indeed this chemical is taken off the market, or if these companies decide, you know, to try to go in another direction. What are the options out there, and how good do they taste?
Yeah, so I mean, the most popular one is what's known as the Swiss water method. That's used by a bunch of sort of really large coffee chains. I mean, folks like Caribou Coffee, Pete's, I believe, as well, also does the water method. And it's interesting, you bring up taste, and that's been maybe the most eye-opening piece of this for me, is that there's this argument over which method tastes better. And, you know, a group of decaf coffee makers actually wrote to the FDA about this recently. They were against the idea of banning methylene chloride. And I'm just going to read a quote from them. They said, quote, "True coffee aficionados in blind tastings select the methylene chloride decaffeinated coffee as one of the best in class," which it's a pretty funny claim if you consider the fact that we're talking about coffee here that's essentially rinsed in paint thinner.
Yeah. Nick, very quickly, what has the FDA had to say about these requests?
Yeah, I mean, so overall, the FDA has acknowledged that in this area, they're really, they're short on resources. I mean, this is a really small office at the FDA that's in charge of determining both the safety of new food additives and also reevaluating existing food additives like methylene chloride. So really, it's they're doing the best they can with the amount of resources they have, but they have a lot of these petitions pending. Yeah. So it's going to time will tell to see what they do.
Nick Florco of STAT, our editorial partner. Nick, thank you very much.
Of course. Thanks for having me.